On the left side, she drew X's next to the rose. She turned it so the boys could see. Brian leaned in for a closer look. If someone like Rex had a child, the child gets, what, one chromosome from the mother, two from the father? The mother would always provide an X, and all his children would have three sex chromosomes instead of two, right? Robin nodded.
That's right. Three sex chromosomes is called trisomy.
Brian again pulled the pad in front of him.
Well, since the only other two Z examples we have are not trisomal, that means someone like Rex couldn't be their father.
You got it, she said. So if Rex mates with a woman...
She pulled the pad back in front of her, and she filled in the six boxes. Two XXYs, two XXZs, two XYZs.
The XXY is Klinefelter's. I have no idea what an XXZ would be, but maybe it's a female version of Rex. We know Rex was an XYZ, so at least in Rex's case, XYZs appear to be normal people.
Brian stood and walked to the kitchen.
So Rex could make more Rexes, he said, as he pulled four fresh beers from the fridge. But someone like Rex can't make an XZ or a YZ.
He opened all four bottles and passed them out before he sat.
So what makes those combinations?
Now for the really crazy part, Robin said.
She walked them through the other Punnett squares to introduce the basic concepts. Now they were ready for the bomb to be dropped. She turned to a fresh piece of paper and drew a box with two columns and three rows. She put an X and a Y above the columns. To the left of the three rows, she drew an X, a Z, and then a second Z. Pookie rolled his eyes.
Sorry to be a downer, Robin, but this is kind of boring. Can you get to the point?
I'm almost there, she said. Just bear with me. Say the father is a normal male.
She circled the XY.
And the mother is XZZ.
She circled the XZZ.
Let's say that, unlike Rex, this XZZ mother can give only a single chromosome to her gamete.
Robin filled in the squares as she talked.
Then you can get the XZ combination of the Blackbeard and the YZ combination that killed Oscar Woody.
Ew, that's nasty, Pookie said. You're saying the two killers we know about, they have a mutant Z chromosome mommy who is getting it on with regular dudes?
Robin nodded as she finished the Punnett square. Two XZs, two YZs, an XX, and an XY.
You could even wind up with normal boys and girls. But what you couldn't get is another XZZ. There's only one way to get that. Now, at the Oscar Woody killing, someone painted Long Live the King on the walls, right?
Brian nodded.
Yeah, and I think Rex is the king in question.
She looked at John.
You were waiting for a punchline? Here it is, but I don't think it's all that funny. If you have a king, maybe you also have a queen.
Robin flipped to a new page and drew. Three columns and three rows for nine squares total.
So you take a king.
She marked the columns XY, XZ, and YZ.
And a queen.
On the left side, she marked the first row X, the second and third each with a Z.
And something interesting comes up.
She filled in the boxes, making an alphabet soup of combinations. Two XZZs, two YZZs, three XYZs, an XXZ, and an XXY. She circled the two XZZs. Brian looked up, the expression on his face one of shocked realization.
If the XZZ is a queen, then the only way to make a new queen is for her to mate with a king.
Exactly, Robin said. If this is the way it works, then you have a eusocial structure with a breeding pair.
John shook his head in annoyed denial.
Wait a minute. Kings, queens, not like English royalty kings and queens, but like termites? Eusocial means one breeding pair producing all the offspring for an entire colony, like ants and bees, right?
Robin nodded.
Rex and the others are people, which means they're mammals. John said, you social creatures are insects.
There's at least two species of you social mammals, Robin said. The naked mole rat and the desert rat. They have a single queen, breeding males, and the rest of the colony are sterile workers.
Pookie pulled the pad in front of him.
I could live with fleshy-headed mutants, I really could, but come on, a king? A queen? Besides, ant colonies have more than just kings or queens, they have workers and drones, right?
Right,
Robin said.
Those are called castes. There's one more caste you didn't mention. Blackbeard had no testicles. He was sterile. Couldn't have passed on his genes to a new generation. But he was strong. He was dangerous, and he could heal fast, which would let him recover from damage. Guess which caste is most likely to get damaged?
Brian stared at her. His eyes widened. He leaned back. Holy shit. Pookie looked back and forth from Robin to Brian.
What? Come on, tell me.
Brian sagged in his chair.
She's saying Blackbeard is like a soldier ant, he said. Soldier ants can't breed. They just live to protect the colony.
They all sat in silence. Robin felt better for having shared the strange hypothesis. It was the only thing she could find to explain the limited data they had. Pookie took a long drink of beer, then let out a belch.
Attack of the ant people, he said. Awesome. Just awesome. But then what's with the costumes?
Robin picked up the pen, started making a random back-and-forth doodle on the pad.
The costumes might be there to hide physical deformities. We really have no idea what we're dealing with. The thing is, I think those teeth marks on Oscar Woody were exactly that. Teeth marks. Not some tool designed to look like teeth. If that's true, we'd be talking about someone with a wide mouth and two big incisors. So big you'd see it instantly. Maybe the masks and blankets hide more physical abnormalities?
Brian shook his head. So slightly, Robin wasn't even sure if he knew he was doing it. John drained his beer in a long pull, then set the bottle on the table.
This new chromosome means we're talking about a specific people, a genetic and possibly ethnic minority. As far as we know, someone is wiping out that minority, genocide, and Amy Zhao is complicit in that act. Maybe there's a damn good reason these ant people have stayed hidden.
John brought up a good point. Technically, the Zeds weren't a separate species, not as long as a queen could breed with normal men. Or a king could breed with normal women. They were human, sort of. But what if they were all killers?
We don't know enough, she said. We need to find that vigilante. Zhao won't give us information, maybe he will.
Brian pulled out his phone, tapped it a few times, then held it out so everyone could see. It was a picture of the bloody arrowhead.
I watched Metz clear out the computer system. All of that data is gone. I'm betting they won't let any of us anywhere near the bodies of Blackbeard, Oscar Woody, or Jay Pilar. We won't be able to search Rex's house. That means this arrow is our only lead. Pooks, I think we have to go back and talk to the guy who literally wrote the book on the subject.
Pookie nodded. He reached into his wallet and pulled out a white business card. There was nothing on it but a phone number. He called, then waited for someone to answer.
Biz, this is Pookie. Sorry to clog your booty call phone with a non-booty call message, but we need to see you. Call me back ASAP.
Pookie put the phone away.
Who is that?
Robin asked.
Mr. Biznass, Pookie said. Your friendly neighborhood Tourette syndrome afflicted throat cancer surviving fortune teller who speaks with a voice box.
Maybe he wasn't making up the thing about the guy jumping across the street, but she knew damn well that one was bullshit. Pookie turned to Brian.
Bri-Bri, it's 3:30 in the morning. I suggest we don't sit here and wait for Biznass to call us back. Everyone is cashed out. I need some sleep, bro. Let's all go home and hit it in the morning.
Brian's jaw muscles twitched. Robin knew he didn't want to wait for even a second, but he trusted Pookie.
All right, he said.
tomorrow.
Robin saw the three men out. Chapter 67, The Monster.
So much pain. The dream's blurry swirl engulfed him, lulled him, but the pain in his belly, the fire in there, that felt more real than anything Brian had ever known. How could anything hurt so much? Being dragged, being kicked, what would happen to him now? He shouldn't have gone out alone, and now it was too late. Savior had him. What would death be like? Would he go to the hunting ground like the old people said? Or would he just end? The religion. It was all a lie, he knew, because he'd drawn the ward to chase the monster away, and yet the monster still got him.
Brian's hands and feet pulled against the restraints, but he was already too weak. The thing in his mouth muffled his cries for help. Sliding on the ground now, across grass, his stomach screaming with agony, where was the monster taking him? Brian looked ahead. He saw a cellar door, the angled kind that led down into a basement. The monster released him. The monster in his cloak, a faceless, man-shaped thing of dark green. It opened the cellar door. Inside, shadows. The monster turned, grabbed Brian by the neck and dragged him to the door. Brian slid off the grass and onto concrete steps. The monster pulled him down. Thump, 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 along the steps, rough edges digging into Brian's shoulder and hip as he slid. The shadows grew, engulfed him, swallowed him up until there was nothing but blackness. Brian woke to someone pounding on his apartment door. He opened his eyes, blinked. Was he still dreaming? If so, he was dreaming about his messy apartment and the cardboard boxes he had yet to unpack. He sat up on his couch. The door pounded again. From outside, a yell.
Rye-rye, rise and shine!
He stood, shuffled to the door and opened it. Pookie walked in, two cups of steaming coffee in hand.
Pooks, what are you doing here?
We have to go see Mr. Biznass. We left him a message last night, remember?
Pookie stepped inside. Brian shut the door. He was still groggy, but now he recalled Pookie calling Biznass the night before.
Yeah, I remember. Sorry, I'll get ready.
Answer your phone much? Pookie said. I was getting worried that I'd find you in the center of one of those bloody symbols.
Did that mean Pookie worried Brian would be a victim? Or the perp? Maybe that was a question best left unasked.
I guess I fell asleep on the couch, Brian said. I was watching TV.
The exhaustion, the stress, the uncertainty. Those things had been weighing on him, combining with the last remnants of the physical aches, joints that felt like they were stuffed with broken marbles, and the lingering chest pain. But he didn't feel those things anymore. In fact, he felt no pain at all.
Bri, you get any sleep?
Brian shrugged.
4 hours, maybe.
Well, you look better, Pookie said. Way better, in fact.
He handed Brian the coffee.
Here's your milkshake. 4 sugars, 3 creams, just the way you like it.
Thanks.
Pookie walked to the coffee table in front of the couch. On it was Brian's pad, a pencil, and a scattering of hastily scrawled protection symbols.
Brian, did you have another nightmare?
Brian started to say no, but stopped. He had vague wisps of something grabbing him, beating him, maybe even stabbing him. He couldn't lock it down.
I did, he said. Worse than the others.
Worse? Do we need to drive somewhere then? See if there's a body?
Brian shook his head.
Not unless the body is mine. I didn't stalk anyone. This time I think something got me.
Got you? Like, killed you?
Brian tried to remember. A few more fuzzy images filtered to the surface of his thoughts.
Yeah. I dreamed about the guy in the cloak, Pooks. The archer. In the dream, his name was Savior.
Savior? Wasn't the Saviors the group that Biznass said burned Marie's children at the stake?
Brian nodded.
Yeah, you're right. This guy in the cloak, he messed me up pretty bad. He dragged me down some steps. I'm not sure what came next. All I know is that I don't think I've ever felt so afraid in my life. He was going to do something to me.
Pookie nodded. He looked worried, like he was waiting for the other shoe to drop.
What happened then?
Brian shrugged.
Don't know. I woke up, drew some symbols, felt better, then went right back to sleep. I didn't go out and put a gun in a kid's face, if that's what you're asking.
Pookie forced a smile.
Of course not. Drink your coffee and shower up. Biz said he was making an exception to see us this early, so let's move it.
Chapter 68 Mr. Biznaz and the Arrow.
Hello again, Officer Pookie. Hello, Officer Fucker Fucker Dicker Pricker.
Pookie smiled wide. Biznaz was actually happy to see them.
Biznaz, old boy, how they hangin'?
Long and red and ready for bed. Come in, come in.
Pookie and Brian sat in the blue plastic chairs. Pookie was keeping a close eye on his partner. The night before, in the private autopsy room, Pookie had thought Brian was about to snap. The man's pain seemed to be gone, but he hadn't gone back to the reserved, emotionless guy that Pookie knew and loved. Now Brian's eyes showed a steady state of simmering anger, and he had an aura of impending violence that seemed a tiny spark away from erupting.
This better be important. It's 10 in the morning, and I don't even kick my bitches out of bed until well past noon.
We found something else, Pookie said. Maybe you can tell us what it means. Brian, show him.
Brian thumbed his phone, calling up a picture of the bloody arrowhead. He set it face up on the table's red velvet, then slid it forward. Biznaz didn't move. He just stared down at the screen. He finally looked up, first at Pookie, then at Brian. Biznaz started to pant. He tried talking without putting the voice box to his throat. Pookie couldn't make out the hissing whisper, but he was pretty sure there was a fucker and pricker in there somewhere. Brian pointed to Biz's throat.
Your hardware, man. Don't forget your hardware.
Biznaz stared at Brian with real fear, then remembered his voice box. He lifted the device to his throat.
Sorry, I fuck, fuck. I mean, I fuck, fuck. I forgot myself.
You've seen this before, Pookie said. Why does it scare you so bad?
I'm not scared. I don't know what it is.
Biz?
Pookie said in a calm voice.
That article you have on the Golden Gate Slasher, it's been wiped out of existence everywhere else. You know about the symbols. You know about Marie's children. You were writing a fucking book on the subject, bro. There's no way you didn't research the arrow that killed the slasher.
Mr. Biznaz looked at each of the cops, then spoke in a tone so pleading, even the mechanical effect couldn't hide it.
I haven't talked, I swear. Please don't hit me.
Maybe Biz faked his Tourette's, maybe he didn't, but Pookie knew he wasn't faking this. Wide eyes, fast breaths, open mouth, hands clutching. Biz thought he was about to get his ass kicked.
We are not going to hit you, Pookie said. People are dying. We need to know how to stop it.
Biznaz just shook his head. The first time Pookie and Brian had visited, Biznaz had thought they'd come to rough him up. He'd thought that when they mentioned the symbols. Biz had formally requested info on the symbols 29 years ago, requested that info from the SFPD. Pookie suddenly thought of Chief Zhao, leaning forward, her knuckles on the autopsy table, threatening Brian Clouser with career destruction if not jail.
Amy Zhao, Pookie said. You ever have a run-in with her, Biz? Or how about Rich Verdi?
Mr. Biznass set the voice box down and put his hands flat on the velvet table. He took a deep breath, tried to collect himself. His left hand put the voice box back to his throat, while his right hand pointed to his thrice-broken, crooked nose.
Who do you think did this to me?
Brian leaned forward.
Zhao and Verdi did that to you? Why?
She told me to stop working on the book. She, bitchy, cunty, told me if I didn't leave it alone, she'd kill me.
Amy Zhao, beating the hell out of a civilian. A week ago, Pookie wouldn't have believed it for a second. Now, it sounded par for the course.
Biz, Brian said, we're going after Zhao. She's protecting a vigilante killer. You help us find him, you help us bring her down.
Biznas stared, his eyes narrowing in disbelief. He looked at Pookie.
Is this true?
Pookie put his right hand on his heart.
Scout's honor.
Biz licked his lips, then nodded. He reached out a trembling hand, picked up Brian's cell phone, and stared at the picture.
What kind of body did you find this in?
Caucasian male, Pookie said. A cop killer. 6'1", 230 pounds, full beard.
Was he wearing a costume?
No,
Pookie said. He looked at Brian.
But we think others who might have been working with him were.
Biznas nodded, as if that was what he expected to hear.
This V-cross is the symbol of the saviors. There should be another symbol on the shaft. An eye with a dagger through it.
Brian took the phone, flicked it to the next photo, the arrow shaft, and set it on the table in front of Biznas. The fortune teller stared, then nodded.
Saviors kill Marie's children. Your cop killer was in the cult. These symbols are on all of the arrowheads. He hand carves them.
He, Pookie said. You know who makes these.
Biznas nodded.
If I tell you, promise you won't come back in a few months and beat me silly.
Why would we do that?
The fortune teller shrugged.
That's what Amy Zhao did. I told you she roughed me up. She came to me just like dicker pricker you guys are now. She wanted info on the arrows, wanted to know who made them. I told her. 2 years later, she and Verdi beat me up. Told me if I didn't, chitty balls, stop working on the Fucko Sniff book, they would kill me.
Amy Zhao had been tracking down an arrowhead. Had she been tracking the person who killed the Golden Gate Slasher? If so, why had she then come back and forced Biznas into silence?
You have our word, Pookie said. We're not going to lay a finger on you.
Biznas held out a fist to Pookie.
Word is bond.
Pookie bumped fists and nodded.
Word is bond.
The fortune teller then held a fist out to Brian.
Word is bond.
Brian rolled his eyes.
What are you, 16 years old? I'm not bumping fists, for fuck's sake.
Biznas didn't move his hand. Brian looked to Pookie.
Just do it, Pookie said.
Brian sighed, then bumped fists.
Word is bond.
Biznas nodded and smiled.
The guy's name is Alder Jessup.
Pookie's skin tingled. Now they really had something.
Biz, if Alder Jessup makes the arrows, who shoots them?
I never found out that part, I swear.
Brian reached out and gently took his phone.
That's okay. Know where this Alder Jessup lives?
Biz leaned forward, waved his right hand over the blue crystal ball.
I see something in your future, officer. Ticker, pricker, fucker, sucker. Something we mystics call a Google search.
He looked up.
That's all I know. Good luck.
Brian offered his hand.
Thank you.
Biznash shook it, then raised his palm and extended it toward Pookie.
Up high, my nizzle.
Pookie gave Biznass a high five, then followed Brian out of the office. Pookie already had his cell phone in hand.
No call for the choo-choo today, Bri-Bri. I'm calling Black Mr. Burns and telling him to get anything he can on this Alder Jessup.
Brian nodded. He seemed to be focusing on staying calm, as if he had to focus, or he'd wind up kicking the holy hell out of the first person to cross his path. Chapter 69. Alder Jessup. For the first time in his career, Brian hoped things would go bad. He hoped this Alder Jessup would start some shit, or maybe just turn tail and run. That would give Brian an excuse to take him down. Someone had to pay, and if Jessup wanted to find out how bad Brian could hurt someone, well, Brian would be happy to oblige. He and Pookie sat in the parked Buick, looking out at Alder Jessup's residence, 1969 California Street. The place stood out like a road whore at a convent. The wall-to-wall line of houses on that street all wore colorful paint, white, yellows, pastels, and terracotta brick. 1969, on the other hand, was gray, completely devoid of color. It looked like a haunted English mansion taken from some soggy countryside estate and jammed into the neighborhood like a fat man dropping his big ass onto an already packed bus bench. Half of an English mansion, that was. Just the left half. The right side of the house rose to a peak that just stopped. Below that peak was a half arch that once might have been intended as an entryway for servants or horses. Where the mirror half of the gray mansion should have been, sat a modern three-story brick apartment building trimmed in white.
Peppy, Pookie said. Martha Stewart doesn't use dungeon gray enough for my taste.
Looks expensive, Brian said. What do you think it's worth, $2 million?
Pookie laughed.
You don't get out much, buddy. This thing is 15 mil if it's a penny. And it's not a penny in case you suck at that multiple choice. Black Mr. Burns said Alder Jessup has lived here for at least 60 years. That's all we have for now.
60 years? Well, maybe Brian would have to cool his jets. No matter how churned up he felt inside, it wouldn't be cool to beat the shit out of a senior citizen.
It's enough to get started, he said. Ready?
Pookie scooped up his stack of manila folders.
Yep, let's go.
They slid out of the Buick and crossed the five lanes of California Street. Four concrete steps led to an archway door that looked like it belonged in a church. An intentionally rusted gate made of cross-diagonal half-inch iron bars blocked the archway. Behind the gate, more stairs, at the top of which sat a fancier door into the house proper. The gate looked like a high-security rig, although you could reach right through the diagonal spaces between the rusted bars. In the middle of the gate was a small cast-iron image of Sagittarius, the half-horse, half-man archer. Pookie gripped the iron bars and gave the gate a shake.
It would take a tank to get through this.
There was a buzzer to the right of the door. Brian pressed it. Moments later, the interior door at the top of the internal stairs opened. The man that descended was not what Brian expected to see greeting them at a multi-million-dollar Pacific Heights mansion. The man stopped behind the gate. He looked at Pookie. He looked at Brian. Then he sneered.
Who the fuck are you two ass clowns?
He was in his early 20s. 5'8", about 150. He wore a black Killswitch Engage concert t-shirt. A black belt with a silver skull buckle held up heavy black jeans. Black combat boots completed the ensemble. His short sleeves showed off intricate tattoos running up both arms. silver bracelets decorated both wrists, some thin loops, some thick bands with detailed engravings. A dozen small silver earrings pierced each ear. He also had a silver loop in each eyebrow, one through his lower lip, and a thick one dangling from his septum. His pitch-black sculpted hair hung down over his left eye.
"San Francisco Police," Pookie said. "I'm Inspector Chang. This is Inspector Clouser. We'd like to talk to Alder Jessup."
"About what?"
"About a murder."
The tattooed man sneered.
"Got a warrant, bitch?"
Brian instantly disliked this kind of person, the type that hated cops for the intolerable sin of enforcing the law. Best to let Pookie handle this, or Brian knew he'd want to rub the guy's face against the concrete sidewalk.
"We don't have a warrant," Pookie said. "But if we have to go get one, someone is going in the back of a marked car, in cuffs, in front of the whole neighborhood."
"You think I care if any of the zombies around here see me in a cop car?"
"Are you Alder Jessup?"
"No,"
the tattooed man said.
"I'm his grandson, Adam."
Pookie rolled his neck, like he was trying to loosen a deep kink.
"Adam, no offense, but you look like the kind of guy who's familiar with the back of a squad car. Am I right?"
Adam nodded.
"I'm guessing Grandpa Alder isn't. Am I right about that one, too?"
Adam stared hatefully, then nodded again.
"Fine," Pookie said. "Now, unless you want me to come back here and haul Grampy Adler off in cuffs, stop busting our balls and let us come in."
Adam thought it over for a second, then he opened the metal gate. He led Pookie and Brian up the steps, through an ornate oak door, and into a foyer.
"Wait right here," Adam said. "I'll go get Grandpa."
Brian watched Adam bound up a beautiful staircase, the railing of which was so lacquered and polished it could pass for wood-toned glass. The man's piercings clinked as he ran. The foyer's furniture, paintings, and sculptures looked expensive. Brian felt like he was standing in a museum wing. Everything, from the art to the marble floor, to even the intricate wood trim on a velvet couch, exhibited some kind of archery theme. Bows, arrows, arrowheads, archers. Moments later, Adam Jessup helped his grandfather down the stairs. Alder wore an immaculate brown three-piece suit. He walked with a long wooden cane topped by a silver wolf's head. Most of his hair was long gone, leaving a mottled scalp and a ring of fine white around his temples.
"Inspectors," Alder said with a light, airy voice. "You need to speak with me."
Pookie introduced himself and Brian again, then got to it.
"We're looking for information on an arrowhead that you may have made."
Brian watched the Jessups carefully. Alder showed no reaction, but Adam's eyes dilated a little. He was nervous. Pookie opened a manila folder and handed over a printout showing Brian's cell phone picture of the arrowhead. Alder took the printout. Adam's eyes went wide. The old man squinted, then reached into his breast pocket and pulled out silver-rimmed glasses. He put them on gently and looked again.
"No, I'm afraid I don't recognize this."
Alder was a cool customer. Brian knew his kind well, the kind that could lie with confidence and ease. His grandson, however, didn't have that skill.
"But you do make arrows," Brian said, "and bows, and all kinds of custom archery stuff."
Alder smiled.
"You've been looking into us. How flattering. We do make custom weaponry, or rather, Adam here does."
Alder looked at his grandson and beamed with pride.
"My hands and eyes aren't what they used to be. Adam has the talent, though. His father, alas, does not. My son can barely do the dishes without chipping the china. Bad hands, you see. Twitchy. Certain skills can skip a generation."
"I know what you mean," Pookie said. "My father is a whiz at Mad Libs, but my vocabulary is a bit thin, to say the least. A tragedy for me, but perhaps my future children will have the gift."
Alder sighed.
"Ah, one can only hope, Inspector Chang."
Brian, impatient, pointed to the printout.
You're sure you guys didn't make this?
I would certainly know if we did, Alder said.
Pookie's cell phone buzzed. He pulled it out, looked at a text. Brian peeked at the screen. The text came from Black Mr. Burns. Brian couldn't wait for Pookie's slow play anymore. He wanted to shake these guys up.
Mr. Jessup, is that the same story you told Amy Zhao 29 years ago? And what do you know about Marie's children?
Pookie looked up from his phone with an expression on his face that said, What the hell are you doing? Alder took two cane-supported steps forward to stand face-to-face with Brian.
Young man, Alder said quietly, whatever you think you know about Marie's children, you don't want to know more. Just leave it alone.
Everything about the old man screamed wisdom and patience. He was the kind of person you listened to, even if you just met him. Too bad Brian didn't give a rat's ass about listening to anyone.
I won't leave it alone, Brian said. And if you're tied up in it, you're going to find that out the hard way.
Alder seemed to sag just a bit. He leaned heavily on his cane. Adam caught the old man, stopped him from falling.
Leave, Adam said. Don't come back without a warrant.
Brian wanted to punch them both.
The old guy gets tired bit? Give me a break.
Brian, Pookie said. We should go.
But he...
We've overstayed our welcome, Brian, Pookie said. Let's go.
Brian ground his teeth. He took one more look at the Jessups, then turned and walked out the door. He needed to hit someone, and his partner was about one snide comment away from the nomination. Brian slid into the Buick and slammed the door.
Hey! Pookie said as he got in. Easy on the merchandise!
Nice fucking job having my back in there. You know those guys made that arrowhead, right?
Pookie started the car.
Yeah, I know, but there's more to detective work than yelling at an old man.
Yeah, like what?
Like that house, Pookie said. Black Mr. Burns ran the property records. The Jessups don't own it.
Who does?
An esteemed gentleman by the name of Jebediah Erickson. In fact, that house has been in the Erickson family for 150 years. So has one other house in town, a house very close to here.
Why was Pookie chasing property records when the Jessups clearly had answers?
So someone else owns the house. Why would that make you want to leave when they were about to give up the goods?
Because Mr. Burns found something else about Jebediah Erickson, Pookie said. 36 years ago, Jeb won a gold medal at the Pan Am Games. Take a guess in what sport?
Brian's anger started to fade.
Archery?
Pookie smiled and nodded.
Wait a minute, Brian said. 36 years ago? So even if the guy was in his mid-20s when he won, he's at least 60. Probably not a guy who can do the things you saw.
Probably not. But we have a gold medal archer who owns the house of a man who makes custom arrowheads. Think that merits a visit?
It sure as hell did.
Where is Erickson's place again?
5 blocks away,
Pookie said.
Let's go see if he's home.
Chapter 70. Jebediah Erickson's House. There was something familiar about Erickson's house, but Brian couldn't place it. He must have seen it before. It was on Franklin Street, a 3-lane one-way that pumped traffic from downtown up to the Marina neighborhood. If you went north, you took Franklin. So sure, he'd probably seen the house in passing hundreds of times. Like the Jessup's place, this house was fairly colorless, gray trim against slate-blue walls. The house faced east, toward Franklin. A small yard sat south of the house, with a driveway at the lot's southernmost end. Where the Jessup's place looked like an old English manor, this house was all San Francisco Victorian. A round 4-story window-covered turret rose up from the house's front right corner, peaked cone roof soaring high into the air. The entryway was a good 15 feet above the sidewalk level, at the back of a 10-by-10 porch that itself was covered by a steeply peaked roof supported by ornate, gray-painted wood columns. The stairs started about 10 feet to the left of the porch. 7 weathered marble steps perpendicular to the street led to a small square landing, then 10 more steps running parallel with the front of the house. They walked up the steps. Brian took in the intricate, waist-high railing that lined the porch. At the back of that porch sat beautiful double doors made of thickly lacquered oak. There was something familiar about the place, all right, and more familiarity than he could know just from passing by. The place carried an aura, a disturbing feeling Brian couldn't nail down. The answers to everything were inside that house. He knew it, deep in his gut.
"Look at this place," Pookie said. "What an awesome set for an episode of Blue Balls."
"Not in the mood to talk cop shows, Pooks."
To the left of the double doors, Brian saw an ornate brass doorbell fixture with a scratched black button in the center. He pressed it. The disturbed feeling grew stronger. As they waited, Pookie rocked back and forth on his toes and heels.
"You weren't a negative Nancy about the show name this time. That mean you're down with Blue Balls?"
"No," Brian said. "It means I don't want to talk about cop shows."
"If you don't like my name, why don't you propose one?"
Brian sighed, cleared his throat. Pookie was trying to be helpful, trying to lighten the mood.
"Fine," Brian said. "How about Brian and Pookie?"
Pookie shook his head.
"That sounds like a pedophiliac puppet show."
Brian pressed the door buzzer again. They waited. Still no answer.
"Come on," Pookie said. "Give me another one, Mr. I Know Show Business."
"Fine, how about last names? Clouser and Chang. You know, with that curly ampersand thing."
Pookie shook his head.
"Nope, won't work. First of all, I'll be the one nailing all the lonely wives of the murdering big business guys. That means my name has to come first."
"Chang and Clouser?"
Pookie shook his head again.
"That could be a police drama, if the show was about two gay cops that moonlighted as interior decorators."
"I'd watch that,"
Brian said, foregoing the doorbell to pound 4 times on the oak door.
"It would be like my favorite show of all time."
They stared at the door, but nothing happened. They turned and walked back down the steps. Brian felt a sense of loss as he walked away, as if the mystery might vanish without him ever knowing the truth.
"Pooks, I have to get in there. This house, Erickson, this is the key to everything."
"How do you know?"
Brian shrugged.
"I just know."
"That's not much to go on," Pookie said.
"Yeah? Neither was a dream about some kid being killed at Meacham Place."
Pookie nodded.
"Good point. It's risky to press our luck, though. Zhao will be informed of any warrant we try to get."
"Fuck warrants,"
Brian said as he opened the Buick's door.
"If she won't play by the rules, neither will we. We have to do this. I mean, unless you still think I'm crazy."
Pookie slid into the driver's seat.
"Well, I wouldn't exactly let you babysit my kids if I had any. Listen, Bri-Bri, I haven't forgotten what I saw on the roof of Susan Panos' building. I couldn't forget that if I drank a gallon of Jack 3 times a day for a week straight. I don't know biology, but I've bought into Robin's social networking species thing."
"You social."
"Whatever. The point is, I'm with you on this. I'm down for the gunfight. We'll figure this out, but you are going to promise me that you will not roid rage your way into that house. We have to think about our next step."
"Pooks, you don't understand."
Pookie slapped the dashboard.
"Shut up, Brian."
Pookie wasn't smiling now. Brian closed his mouth. His friend wanted to be heard.
"I've stood by you," Pookie said. "You owe me. You're not going in there without a plan, even if I have to knock you out myself."
"You can't knock me out."
Pookie waved his hands dismissively.
"That's irrelevant. We're going to get the vigilante. We're going to expose Zhao. We're going to find the ZY killer that's still out there and anyone else who helped him. We'll get to the bottom of this Marie's children bullshit. But I've known you for a long time, and you're way over the edge. Right now, you'll make bad decisions. I won't. So we do this my way. Agreed?"
Brian felt an urge to get out of the Buick, run back up those steps, kick in the door, and let the chips fall where they may. He took a breath and fought that urge down. Pookie had backed him through all this crazy shit. That couldn't be ignored. Pookie was right. Brian owed him. All right, Brian said. What's the next step?
Let me think for a minute.
They drove in silence. Pookie didn't cut anyone off. He turned at random, obeying all the signals. Finally, the Buick turned down California Street, heading toward the financial district. The setting sun cast an orange juice glow on the horizon, a glow that backlit the elongated pyramid that was the Transamerica building.
We need more info on Erickson, Pookie said. Black Mr. Burns is digging as we speak. I'll also have Robin test the waters at the medical examiner's office, see if she can find anything.
Okay, Brian said. What about me? Pookie smiled, nodded.
You, my little Terminator, I'm not going to ask you to stay away from Erickson's house, because I saw how you were looking at the place. I don't really want to hear you lie to me and tell me that you'll steer clear. So, you do a stakeout, but you just watch. You do not approach. Give me your word you won't move without backup.
It was one thing for Pookie to believe Brian wasn't a murderer, but another for him to go all in like this. If the man had his head on straight, he should have cut ties long ago and moved on. Pookie showed loyalty, true friendship. You back your boy no matter what. And for that level of dedication, was Pookie really asking for that much in return? No matter how bad Brian wanted to go in that house and find answers, he'd do what Pookie asked. I just watch, Brian said. I promise. Pookie reached out his right fist.
Word is bond.
Brian laughed, and the sound surprised him.
Ticker, pricker, fucker, sucker,
he said, and bumped fists. Brian felt better, and he had to admit Pookie's way was just flat-out smarter. The archer had survived a 6-story drop, then promptly killed a man with a freaking arrow. If that didn't fit the description of bad motherfucker, nothing would. He was too dangerous to take one-on-one. Brian settled back and looked out the Buick's window. He watched the setting sun sink behind the Transamerica building, counting the minutes until he could get out and hunt. Chapter 71. Amy Zhao's Tea Time. Chief Amy Zhao took a sip of tea. The tiny porcelain Miss Piggy cup held only imaginary tea, of course, but nothing could taste sweeter.
She said. This is very good. Which one of you made this?
Her twin girls giggled.
We both made it, Mom,
they said in unison. It spooked the hell out of Amy when they did that. She sat in a little pink chair at a little pink table. Her daughter Myrrh sat on her left, her daughter Tabs on her right, and her husband Jack in front of her. He also sipped at a tiny teacup, his pinky properly extended, a pink flower hat pinned to his thinning blonde hair. The girls wanted him to wear it, so wear it he did. Jack said. I do believe this is possum guts tea. Tastes delightfully rotted and smells divinely stinky. The girls giggled. They looked adorable in their little party dresses. Amy felt at peace. Almost at peace. She didn't get many moments like this. And even when she did, an internal voice taunted her. Said, "These days are almost gone, and you've pissed most of them away." With her job, she could never fully relax. And that job was never far away. Her cell phone sat on the tabletop, looking horribly out of place so close to teacups and the Kermit the Frog teapot. Tabitha reached for an imaginary piece of cake. Myrrh didn't like the imaginary cake. She had said as much after the first imaginary bite. Tabitha preferred to be called Tabs because, as she put it, it was funner. Mary demanded to be addressed only as Myrrh, for reasons Amy and Jack had never been able to pry out of the girl. Jack looked at the girls with a narrow-eyed glare of suspicion.
Wait just a cotton-picking minute. Did you two spike this tea with runny elephant poop?
The girls squealed with laughter, throwing their heads back and rocking in their chairs.
No, Daddy,
Tab said.
It's not elephant poop. It's monkey poop.
Jack set his cup down with comedic rage, then crossed his arms and sat back, shaking his head hard enough to make the pink flower hat wiggle. God, but the girls loved that man. Amy realized with a start that Tabs was wearing her heavy, silky black hair and long pigtails. She had never worn her hair like that before. She'd always worn it down, like Murr's was now. They had inherited Amy's hair, not a trace of her husband's thin blonde locks.
Tabitha, honey, your hair looks nice. Thank you,
she said and took a sip.
Did you try that hairstyle out today just for the tea party?
Murr laughed and pointed at Tabs.
Ha ha ha! You've been wearing those stupid things for 3 days.
Tab sank into her chair, little chin tied to her chest. She looked crestfallen. Murr, Jack said. That's not nice. Murr didn't catch the hint.
Mommy didn't even notice,
she said to Tabs.
I told you it was stupid to try and be different.
Amy slapped the table, rattling the cups and their saucers.
Murr, you stop that!
Murr's eyes widened. She shrank into her chair. Amy's tone echoed in her own ears. She'd talked to Murr not like a mother to a daughter, but like the chief of police to a subordinate. Amy hated herself at that moment. Couldn't she put the cop away and just be a mom, even for a few minutes? Tab suddenly stood and threw her teacup across the room. It landed noiselessly on her bed.
You didn't notice, Mom, because you're never home.
Tabs ran from the room, her little dress swishing with each little step. Jack stood. He took off his flower hat and tossed it on the table as he followed Tabs out. Jack would talk to the girl, leaving Amy to deal with Murr.
Mary, honey, I shouldn't have yelled like that.
The little girl's eyes narrowed hatefully, as only a little girl's can do.
Don't call me that. I like Murr. And why did she have to go and ruin the party? We never get to see you. Honey, I know. But you have to understand that Mommy's job is...
Amy's phone let out a tone. A special tone. 3 dots, 3 dashes, 3 dots. SOS. That tone represented only one person. She picked up the phone. He had texted her a picture. High angle, looking down onto a marble porch she recognized on sight and would never forget. The picture showed 2 men waiting in front of a closed door. Pookie Chang and Brian Clouser. The text beneath the picture said, They also stopped by Alder's place. Take care of this. Amy felt her temper rising. She had told them to keep away. She had given them a chance. Even before the Boyko murders, Robertson had wanted to bring Brian and Pookie into the loop. Wanted to tell them everything. Amy had said no, trusting her instincts that the men weren't the kind of people who could properly manage the gray areas. The picture Erickson had texted showed, quite clearly, that her instincts had been dead on. Brian and Pookie were by far the best inspectors on the force, but they just wouldn't listen.
Just like another cop almost 30 years ago, right, Amy? Remember how you wouldn't listen when Parkmeyer told you to back off? Remember what happened because you didn't.
She became aware she was alone in the room. Murr had left. Amy looked at the tea set, at the empty chairs. She was missing her daughter's childhoods. They had been born only yesterday, it seemed. When had they grown so big? She wanted to be with them, but she had a job more important than anyone could ever know. Not even Jack knew all of it. Amy stood, gave the table one last longing look, then headed downstairs. Time to put an end to this. Chapter 72, Closing In. Rex sat in a plastic garbage can. Rex waited. Rex watched. Where had this sensation been all his life? How many hours had he wasted drawing pictures, when the real thing made him feel alive, made him feel complete. His tummy tingled inside. His boner had been hard for hours. The garbage can was across the street from April Sanchez's house. It was one of those big brown kind, wedged into a space between two houses, along with the blue recycling kind and the green one people were supposed to use for compost. The garbage can smelled, but Rex didn't care. There had only been one bag inside, which he'd moved to another can. Squatting inside, he could peek out just under the lid and watch for April. April the meth head. April the slut. She had rich parents. They didn't own part of a house. Not just a single floor, they owned the whole thing. All three stories and a garage. The kids in school talked about April behind her back. Talked about how ugly she was. They called her Shrek. She wasn't fat like Shrek. Most druggy girls weren't. But her face bore a passing resemblance. April had been the one who told Alex about Rex's drawing. It was her fault Alex broke his arm. The cops had to be looking for Alex, and here he was with a perfect place to hide. Last night, Rex had followed Alex here. Since then, he hadn't seen anyone but April enter or leave. She fetched pizza, bags of groceries, probably whatever Alex wanted. Darkness was falling, but even then Rex would wait. Marco had said not to move before midnight. Rex hadn't listened to Marco, and now Marco was dead because of it. Rex had learned a valuable lesson from that. Some things needed to be done in the dark. Marco had also told Rex that there was a real family out there somewhere, a real home. But without Marco, how was Rex going to find it? He didn't want to be alone. His dreams had reached out and connected with people, made them do the things he wanted done. Rex wondered, could he do the same thing when he was awake? It was worth a try. And anyway, it was a long time until midnight, and he had nothing else to do. How could this work? Did he, what, throw his thoughts? Maybe if he just focused, really concentrated on his need to find these people. Rex closed his eyes. He took a long, deep breath.
Find me. Find me.
Chapter 73. The Stakeout. Brian walked around the block for the sixth time. West on Jackson, south on Goff, east on Washington, north on Franklin. Then reverse, go back the other way. A slow walk, looking all around at everything, looking for places to hide. There were 8- and 10-story apartment buildings on the other side of Franklin Street. He could go up on those roofs and watch the front of Erickson's house. But big apartment buildings meant a lot of windows, and that meant any number of people could be looking out those windows at any hour of the night. If the archer wanted to enter or exit the big gray Victorian, he wouldn't go out the front where so many people could potentially see. He'd have an exit behind the house, or maybe out on the roof and down the side, something hidden. Brian used his phone to call up a satellite map of the house and the block. The top-down view might give him ideas. Erickson's house had a backyard, a pretty big one by San Francisco standards. Tall buildings surrounded that backyard, hiding it from view. Could he get up on one of those buildings? He flicked his fingers on the screen, zooming in on the map. There, on Jackson Street, a tree that looked taller than the building it was next to. He traced the route with his fingertip. If he could scale that tree, he'd be on the roof of a building that abutted Erickson's backyard. Brian would be 4 stories up, giving him a perfect view of the rear of Erickson's mansion. He nodded. Yes, that was the spot. He couldn't shake a persistent adrenaline buzz. This guy, this savior... he was a real challenge. Big game. He's big game because he's a killer. That flips all your switches and turns all your dials to 11. Brian walked to Jackson Street to check his target. He slowly walked past his tree, following the trunk up with his eyes, seeing how he'd climb it to reach that roof. It wasn't dark enough yet, but soon he'd circle back, climb to the roof, and set up his hunting blind. then the fun would begin.